injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com and our build-up to Labor Day. I want to thank the United Steelworkers International and our friend Leo Gerard and Mike Bolton and Menasha, as well as our good friends at the Teamsters in Madison and our friends at Madison Firefighters Local 311. And be sure to join us on Labor Day starting at noon. I will be podcasting out at the South Central Federation of Labor. A friend of labor for many years from a labor town, State Representative Corey Mason now joins us. Representative Mason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sly.
I don't think I've ever called you Representative Mason before, but...
Yeah, Corey's just fine.
Okay. So, as we lead up to this Labor Day, what is the mood? You know, because I've been to some labor fests in Kenosha and we're seeing that over the years that didn't seem all that joyous. I guess you could say about just about any place in the country now. But what's the mood going to be like this Labor Day in Racine?
Optimistic, I think. I think people are hopeful, right? I mean, so, you know, Racine, for those who don't know, is a manufacturing town, right? This is a town of Case Tractors and SC Johnson and Modine and Twin Disc, and, you know, the list goes on.
It's my kind of place.
Yeah, it is a place where people build things and take pride in doing so. And, you know, for most of the 20th century, the way Racine worked was, you know, you could get a job at a factory and you wouldn't be rich, but thanks to our friends in organized labor, people negotiated fair hours, wages, and working conditions, and most of those workers were middle class, and they could afford to own a home and got a pension and, you know, would maybe be able to send their kids to college one day. That was how Racine worked for most of the 20th century. But here we are in Racine, you know, a few decades after these free trade agreements that have been decimating for manufacturing in towns like ours, and we've lost more than 12,000 manufacturing jobs, good manufacturing jobs.
In Racine County, in the Racine community,
we've lost more than 12,000 manufacturing jobs in the last 25 years. And we're a city of 80,000, so think about that, right?
Racine used to be the second largest city in the state.
Yeah, it was once almost 100,000 people. Uh-huh. So those jobs leave, and, you know, some of the jobs are replaced, but they're replaced with minimum wage retail jobs or, you know, jobs that just don't pay what they used to. And so you got people working two jobs to make, you know, a fraction of what they used to make in the 90s, right? And so it's been tough. So for a town like ours, which takes pride in building things and innovating and rolling up their sleeves and getting to work, the idea of a company coming right next door to us and saying, we're going to hire 10,000 people to build our facility and then have 13,000 people working here, making, you know, $53,000 a year plus benefits, well, that sounds pretty good to people. That sounds pretty exciting to people. So, you know, there's lots of questions that people understandably have about how big the incentives are and the environmental exemptions and you know, did it really have to be that big and did they really have to do it that way, which, you know, no, they didn't. But at the end of the day, for people who are hoping to raise their family here and have the dignity of work of knowing that they can build something and still feed their family, this is welcome news.
Corey Mason with us at SliceOffice.com. Corey is State Representative Mason, as well as Representative Onstad and Representative Barca, were the three Democrats that voted for the Foxconn bill. Needless to say, Facebook exploded. It is very contentious, partly because it is viewed in the partisan lens. Everything in Wisconsin is extremely polarized. But I got a chance to watch your floor speech before we started podcasting today. And, you know, it's interesting to listen to you because if you listen to the first part of the speech, you're not exactly throwing a lot of praise at the steel. And then you go down a very interesting story about your grandmother and the pride she took in building something in Racine, building things in Racine. And the tragic story of what happened to Racine, partly in thanks to congressmen like Paul Ryan and senators like Ron Johnson, who never saw a free trade deal they didn't like. So it was kind of a tale of two speeches. Would that be a fair assessment of your speech?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, do I like the deal that they put forward here? No, this is not the deal that I would have negotiated, right? Particularly on the environmental exemptions, and I'd like more assurances that the people that are going to build this thing are actually Wisconsin people and the people working there. There's better guarantees that Wisconsin people will have a shot at that work. Absolutely, I'd like a stronger deal. And the environmental exemptions really are really unnecessary and set a really bad precedent, right? So I have real concerns about the way the governor negotiated this deal and did some things that, frankly, might have made it not be such a partisan issue if he'd negotiated it better and actually taken some of the Democrats' suggestions on this. But at the end of the day, you know, more than party or ideology, we have a representative democracy, and it's your job to represent your hometown first and foremost. And in 11 years of knocking on doors, you know, you hear the stories of people who want a shot at a middle-class life again. Who the people working two jobs just trying to make ends meet, who are, you know, single moms, or the guy that I met who had a union job in the 90s and now he drives truck with no benefits and he doesn't know how he's going to retire. And, like, you hear these stories over and over again, and you can't bemoan the decline of manufacturing in Wisconsin and then vote against the biggest potential manufacturing announcement in state history at the same time.
Then let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Sitting behind you, one of the champions, well, during your floor speech, she sits behind you, one of the champions of labor, Christine Sinicki. You know, Gordon Hinds comes from a manufacturing town, and his passion for, I think he has similar views as yours. Do you bemoan their votes?
No, I don't. I mean, the criticism they were making about the bill, I thought were legitimate criticisms, but, you know, the Democratic Party also has to be the party of working people, right? And if there's an opportunity to bring 13,000 good middle-class jobs into our state, I think there's plenty of space, good space, to be critical of the way the governor has negotiated this. But I also think we need to be mindful of the fact that, you know, the people we represent don't all have college degrees and drive around in Priuses. Like, some of them are working class folks who want to ride around in American-made vehicles because that's important to them. And the community that I represent, that's still very important.
As you can bet, I don't drive a Prius.
Right. I guess as much. I mean, look, my car is one of the last cars that has an engine that was made at the Chrysler plant in Kenosha, right? I mean, I'm very proud of that fact. But people take pride in building things, and they want an economy that allows people to go to work and make things. And I just think that Democrats need to be careful in the midst of this, be critical of the deal, be critical of the size of it and the environmental exemptions and all those things. But let's make it clear that we are still the party of working people. And if there's an opportunity to bring good jobs to Wisconsin, we're for that.
Now, some of the people that voted against the Foxconn deal did vote for the Milwaukee Bucks arena because of the way that deal was structured versus the Foxconn
yep.
deal, the commitment
yep.
to, you know, Wayne Lazary and Wes Edens are, you know, they may be New York stockbroker guys, but they're pretty decent human beings
yeah.
when it comes to caring about workers. So quite a deal was struck, and that's already paying dividends with putting people to work in some pretty tough zip codes in Milwaukee. Why couldn't that kind of deal have been cut? If Scott Walker was part of that deal, I stood next to Scott Walker at the groundbreaking, well, by Scott Walker during the groundbreaking for that arena. Why couldn't the governor have cut a deal like that with Foxconn?
Well, it could have and should have, right? I mean, there's no reason that we couldn't have put incentives in there that were also tied to making sure you were hiring people from Wisconsin and people from disadvantaged areas that want a shot at the construction trades or the opportunity to work in a plant like this. They absolutely could have and should have done that. And so they trumpet that they're not going to pay less than, you know, $15 an hour to get the incentives, but they could have made that clearer in in the proposal. And I think if they would have, it would have been a broader bipartisan vote. I mean, I think there were people, well, I don't want to speak for anybody individually, but I think there were people in my caucus that if things had been differently, done differently and negotiated differently, and they felt like there was something they could go back and tell their constituents they fought for and got to improve the deal for taxpayers, workers, or the environment, you would have had a much broader bipartisan vote. But the governor, unfortunately, took the route of, well, look, we run the shop here, so we can do it our way. And that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. We could have had a better deal. The Senate hasn't yet voted on it. I'm still hopeful that Wisconsin might yet still get a better deal as it moves its way through the Senate.
You know, there's a flip side to this. There's parts of rural Wisconsin where this deal is not polling well at all, and it's real clear that Speaker Voss knows it's not polling well because he let Representative Novak off the hook on this. I think Adam Jarko might be a little different story. I think he thinks a little more for himself. But so there are parts of Wisconsin where people are voting their constituencies as well, and they're saying, what's in this for us?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and it's a fair question. It is a harder question to explain if you're part of the Republican majority that's been underfunding infrastructure and roads and high-speed internet and other things that would make a difference for rural Wisconsin. So when something like this comes along, they don't see what's in it for them because, you know, we've been put in a position where it's us against them for so long. Look, the criticisms that people have are legitimate criticisms that I share, but I also want the jobs. And
what about the unknown here? I read a piece the other day about the fact that taxpayers in your area, maybe you're running for mayor of Racine,
yes,
which we'll get to in a little bit, but the taxpayers may be on the hook here.
Sure, yes. I mean, so there is no doubt going to be local incentives that they ask for from the county and from the village that it may be in as well. And they're going to be asked to have some sort of incentives in this. And no doubt those are big incentives that they're asking for. And they have to be reasonable, right? I mean, there has to be a point at which it's not sort of giving away the farm to get people to come here. But again, I can drive you around town and show you the factories that used to be. And, you know, when people think about the idea of a facility, you know, 11 times the size of Lambeau Field that would employ more than 10,000 workers, people are ready to incentivize that, to invest in that in a way that they need to do responsibly, but they want to be able to do it. Now, it's another area where the bill could be stronger. The state says that it'll back up, you know, 40% of the incentives if something goes wrong. But, you know, if they leave, that could be a real problem.
Well, let me ask you about that. Ask you about that. The lessons from what happened in Harvard, Illinois with Motorola.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know that story, right?
I do. They
basically built a plant with antiquated technology. Cell phones changed. And partly because of most favored trading status for China and
yep,
some other bad trade deals, they left. It's empty. I think maybe they're starting to put some things in it now, but that left a big hole, probably affected some Wisconsin workers as well. What's to prevent that from happening with Foxconn?
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale. I would like there to be better clawbacks in the bill. Now, they certainly don't get the incentives that they would like unless they hire the people they say they're going to hire and build the facility that they're going to build. But yeah, there could be stronger clawbacks. But at the end of the day, you have to say, well, what Harvard, Illinois did was a bad example. But I don't want to tell my constituents, we said no on 13,000 jobs because Motorola screwed it up in the state next door 15 years ago. I mean, yes, there is some risk involved.
Why do you think Foxconn is, I mean, Foxconn, you know, is a Taiwanese company, but they build stuff in China. They build stuff all over the world. Why do you think they're insourcing?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think part of it has to do with, I mean, this is speculative, but certainly the conversations that Trump has had about trade, I think, plays into it. But I also think the way you look at it, I mean, they need access to water, a lot of it, and they need access to international airports. And there's actually not a lot of places in the world that you can do that. And, you know, what they're basically saying to the government is like, look, if you can subsidize a substantial portion of the wages, you know, then the American market looks more attractive to them. I wish we weren't in that day and age, but this is, you know, the net result of decades of moving jobs overseas that we have to compete very hard to insource.
Well, and let us remember Scott Walker went to China and wore a China lapel pin.
Right.
He is a free trader from the word go.
Right. Right. But as I said in my speech, you know, say what you will about investing money into a Chinese company and the concerns that it raises. And I share those concerns. But even worse is watching factories in your community shutter and move to China and Mexico.
All right. We'll take a break and pick it up from there. State Representative Corey Mason with us at slysoffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. I want to thank the sponsors for our Labor Day podcast show coming up on Monday. Want to thank the United Steelworkers always, our friend Leo Gerard. Also want to thank Madison Firefighters Local 311. And, of course, our friends at the Teamsters. Corey Mason with us. He is a state representative from Racine. He was elected in, what, 2006?
Correct.
Okay. I got a good memory. I haven't killed all my brain cells. Okay, so let me ask you about organizing this plant.
Yeah.
You know, a lot. One of the things that was set in motion with the Bucks deal was that the Milwaukee Bucks would remain neutral. And there was a project labor agreement. What are the possibilities of organizing this plant?
Well, the possibilities only exist if the workers are there. I had a great conversation with somebody at the UAW who said exactly that. Like, look, unionizing workers is very hard, but there's zero chance of organizing them if the plant doesn't come. So that's real. And certainly UAW has had some real challenges in the auto industry down south, and their victories or lack thereof.
Well, because companies are willing to break the law. Nissan was willing to break the law in Mississippi.
Right. So real challenges, no doubt. But you can't unionize a workforce that isn't there. And I would rather have them there and have the UAW or somebody else have the opportunity to come in and organize them, even with all the challenges, than not have them at all and have no chance of organizing them. Because, you know, when I go to UAW meetings right now, the retirees picnic is a lot bigger than the active picnic.
Yeah, it's the same way in Janesville. Yeah. So it is a possibility. It's not completely unfounded to think that they could get organized.
It's not. I mean, it's certainly more of a possibility if they're there than if they are not. And look, would I prefer a Buck-style agreement where they did sort of a labor peace agreement where they had card check neutrality and said that they were going to build the thing wall to wall with a labor union and the building trades? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I would still take the opportunity to build it and have the workers and have the chance of them being organized and have them not be there at all and have 13,000 fewer jobs in my community.
So when state senator and U.S. Senate candidate Leah Vukmir, I know she's not in officially, but she certainly seems like she's running. When she runs around the state and crows that we got Foxconn because of Act 10 and right to work and the attack on project labor agreements, what is your response? What is your retort to that?
Hogwash is my retort to that. I mean, I think they're here for the $3 billion in incentives. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. But, you know, when you have something like this, it allows you to sort of, you know, confirm all their biases about all the horrible things that are happening here. But the idea that that they had to take away, you know, bargaining rights in as many workplaces as possible in both the public and private sector, and that's why people come. They're here for the water and access to an interstate and an international airport. All that other stuff that has divided the state of Wisconsin for far too long is hogwash, and them trying to sort of justify their bad previous work with the one good result that they've had for the first time in a long time.
So what are the lessons learned here? Is this the future? Is this how every deal is going to be cut in the future? Or is this just the best we can get under Scott Walker?
I mean, that's a great question. Two great questions. I don't know that we know what the future holds. I don't think we can hand out $3 billion every time a company wants to come to town. But I do think what's different about it is, you know, this is potentially not just one company, but an entire industry that could set up here and have a real ripple effect in Southeast Wisconsin. The flip side of that, though, is, you know, creating these environmental exemptions for a company that we're giving billions of dollars to and, you know, incentivizing it so deeply does make you ask, well, what are we not going to be able to do now because we're doing these incentives? I think the proof will be in the pudding. You know, we're going to do these incentives. They're going to build here, and we're going to see how it goes. And we'll see. I don't think it's going to be the next abandoned Motorola plant. I think it's going to be transformative for Southeast Wisconsin, but the proof will be in the doing. And for Racine, which has led the state in unemployment for far too long, we need an opportunity like this to get people back to work.
Let me ask you about your colleague and former mayor now of Racine, John Dickert, who I've known so long. I knew him when he was a mobile DJ spinning tunes at Tony Earle's election parties, okay?
Wow.
Yeah, that's... That goes back a couple of years. Anyway, he really has become quite eloquent and passionate about the great, you know, keeping the Great Lakes clean.
And yes, it's, a passion I share.
Yeah, well, I think we all do. We all, you know, those are our lakes, and we take great pride. As you know, the Trump administration cut 100% of Great Lakes restoration. Do I think that's going to be in the final budget? I doubt it. Are you there, Corey?
I am.
Okay,
no, I'm here.
So let me ask you about this. What has he said about this deal, and what does he think about the effect of that Foxconn could have on the Great Lakes?
Yeah, I haven't talked to John Dickert about this deal specifically, so I can't tell you what he would say, but he has taken a job to be the executive director of the Council of Great Lakes Mayors. So obviously he works with mayors across the basin who care deeply about protecting the Great Lakes. I care deeply about protecting the Great Lakes. I also chair the Great Lakes Legislative Caucus, which will be having a meeting coming up pretty quick here. There's some things about the environmental exemptions that are bad, and we should acknowledge them. It basically gives them a pass on some wetlands remediation, environmental impact studies, and moving streams, and lets them do things as they construct the facility that I think sets a really bad precedent. But people also need to know that there's nothing in the law that exempts them from the standards in the Great Lakes Compact, the return flow that they would have to put back into Lake Michigan, the air quality standards, or the stormwater or runoff pollution that they're going to have to deal with as they're operating the facility. And that's an important distinction. We're not talking about sort of the mining moratorium lift where we're going to let a company just dump mine tailings right into a river and then Lake Superior. This is a set of exemptions that are a bad precedent that gives a company a pass on environmental impact statements when they go to build it. But when it comes to operating it, they still have to follow all of our water and Great Lakes Compact and air quality standards.
Let me ask you about your decision to run for mayor of Racine.
Okay.
Was it a personal decision? Was it a career decision? What was the, was it a hometown pride decision? What made you want to do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. It is, at the end of the day, politics for me are about improving the lives of the people that you represent. That's what it is first and foremost. It's not about title or number of things that you can say that you finished or what have you. It really is asking yourself at the end of the work you do, have I made life better for the people who elected me? And that is harder and harder to do in a very partisan, Scott Walker-driven state legislature. And the number of things that you can point to that you can accomplish are limited. At the local level, that's where stuff is getting done. That's where things happen. So I'll give you an example. So, you know, President Trump announces that we're pulling away from the Paris Accords and that climate change is no longer a priority for the United States of America. Well, I did two things that week when he announced. First, I signed on to a letter with fellow legislators calling on the president not to do that. And then I announced as a candidate, if I'm mayor of Racine, we're still going to follow the Paris Accords and reduce our carbon footprint and get some things done. And that right there is the big difference between being a legislator and being a mayor. Like while you were stymied by the partisan divides that have really crippled Madison and Washington, at home, you can still get things done. And if you look at where progressive change is happening in America, cities are really leading the way. So when I think about making positive change for the people that I want to represent and the home that I love, you can do a lot more good as mayor than you can in Scott Walker's legislature.
You think it's going to be Scott Walker? You sound pessimistic that the Democrats can make any gains in 2018 or elect a Democratic governor.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, I mean, I've been in the legislature 11 years, two in the majority, nine in the minority. And so you look at what you've been able to accomplish mm-hmm. in that environment, and you look at what you can get done at the local level, and that's where I think I can do more good for more people. But, you know, I think between the redistricting lawsuit that I think is going to have a positive result and a slate of some really competitive candidates that we've got on our side, I think Scott Walker is beatable. But for me, at this moment, doing more good for more people in Racine is about representing all of them here at home in City Hall.
Are you supporting someone for governor?
I am not. I am 7 weeks out from an election for mayor, and that is my singular focus at this point. I think we've got some great candidates, but right now I'm singularly focused on getting through this mayor's race.
Well, let me ask you a question about an issue then.
Sure.
When people say Democrats should not talk about repealing Act 10 or collective bargaining rights or unions at all, what do you say?
I think that's not a good idea. I think we have to talk. I was just at an event with the Communication Workers of America yesterday talking about trying. Yes. And we had they were doing a nationwide tour talking about how we have to stop outsourcing and stop that from happening. And we had the former president from the carrier plant in Indiana come and tell the story about how, you know, Trump really fooled everybody on what happened there. But the story of the middle class in America, particularly in the manufacturing sector, but across the economy, you can't tell the story of building a strong middle class without telling the story of unions and organized labor. And if we're serious about bringing middle class jobs back to this country and keeping the ones that they have, the best way that we've seen in this country to equalize wages, to give more people access to the middle class, has been hand in glove with working with organized labor. And we shouldn't shy away from that conversation. We should actually run toward it, because I think people know that they are working harder and falling further behind economically. I think they're ready for somebody to advocate for them, not just at the ballot box, but in the workplace too.
We'll put up a link to your speech so people can see. And I can't say that, believe me, I don't like speaking from on high in Madison. I'm not sure I would have voted for, I don't think I would have voted for the Foxconn deal, but I think that you explain yourself, and you do represent Racine. You don't represent Wanakee. And I think that it's imperative that people listen to you on why you made that decision. I mean, you, Todd Onstad, and Peter Barca are three of the greatest friends labor has ever had. So I think people need to take that into consideration.
Well, thanks, Lyle.
Corey Mason, who I proudly support for mayor, even though I don't live in Racine. Thanks for coming at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Thanks, Lyle, and happy Labor Day to all your listeners.
Sliceoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.